Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit grade to keep a sin photostatism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Murder Dog and Michael Dog? Can you feel it? Wolf.
Yeah.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a Bitcoin no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bitcoin.org.
Yep.
Yay!
So, Fiend Site's been up and down and up and down and up and down. We're working on it. So, if you're like hungry for the audio and the site's not up tonight, wait, you wouldn't know this until you hear it tomorrow. Never mind. It'll go up when it gets up. But
That's what he said.
That's what he said. So I guess I got nothing to talk about except one important thing. Then I'm going to leave. Then I'm going to let you guys get a nerdy in edgewise. So I don't know. Some people have been telling me what to do on the Fiends lately. Like some guy made some critiques and somebody else said, you should take that criticism. And it's like, I'm not going to do what the fans tell us to do. It's not that kind of show. We don't take input on what you want us to do. This is Free Talk Live is radio you control. The Freedom Fiends is radio we control. You don't get to touch the dial. You can touch the dial and leave, and that's it.
Radio
bad
you
touch,
control.
Bad touch.
Which means
officer?
What? Jeremy?
I said which means it's radio you control, but you know that's what let's
me? Yeah, well, not when I leave. So that's when I'm gonna talk and dump, take a big radio dump and leave. But it's I don't following the goal or suggesting or steering anything that the way the audience wants is antithetical to doing this. Cause there's, you know, if you want to be involved in a show, if you want to listen to a show that you can be involved with, there's about 10,000 other shows you can do that with. But basically like every other area in our lives, you know, where we're making something, we're generally being told what to do. So this is, we make, you know, the hosts make no money in this. I make so little money on it and sometimes lose money on it to the point where if it's not fun, I'm not going to do it. So I'm not going to take your suggestions, well-meaning or otherwise, about this show. If you don't like it, turn it off. You know, that's actually like considered really bad radio. You're never, ever, ever supposed to say, if you don't like it, change the station. Like advertisers hate that. Because people might actually do it.
Luckily, we don't have that problem.
Yeah, what are you crunching there, Lou? Well, the popcorn thing. It's not that entertaining. The things before and after us probably have ads, so stations and advertisers care if we say, change the channel if you don't like it. Actually, don't change the channel. Just go yell out your window at 3 in the morning that you're mad as heck and you want me to do something about it and change my show. Do that. All right. Next order of business. So explain what the alt-right is for the people in the cheap seats. Alt-right is something we don't like, something we're not, something people we used to know are. But what is it?
The alt-right started... did you want to take it, Lou?
Go ahead, Jeremy. I'll jump in. Oh.
Yeah, I figured you were still eating. The alt-right is, as far as I can find, and it seems to be, points to the same place, the term itself was coined by that wacko Richard Spencer, who got himself punched in the face at least once. I still keep swearing I heard us about a second time. But anyway, at one of the rallies a couple of weeks ago. And it basically, like, all the instances of the phrase being used all seem to be stemming around the time when he allegedly coined it, which I think was 2008, 2009, somewhere in that neighborhood. But all the other groups that were talking about it and using it and passing it around were groups like, I don't think Stormfront, that, what are they? They're a white nationalist or neo-Nazi group, right? Stormfront, that's the name of it?
More or less. Right one.
Yeah. I don't know if it was them specifically, but it was groups like theirs who were tossing the word around and using it to represent themselves. And all of these groups had one thing in common. They were all some variation of white nationalists. Whether they were full-blown neo-Nazis, whether they were, you know, wanted to kill everybody of a different race, or whether they just wanted to live separately from them or whatever, they were all that.
And when they get in trouble, they have to go in the whiteness protection program.
Ba-dum-bum. So, but they largely flew under the radar and weren't much of a big thing until the Trump campaign. And then all of a sudden, they attached themselves to the Trump campaign, and they became a very, very, very vocal minority.
And then a lot of them believe they had something to do with Trump winning.
Yes.
Yeah. And it might be true, like 1% out of, you know, 100% of all the things that contributed to it.
Yeah. But even beside that, they're just, what happened was a lot of celebritarians or quasi-celebrities or people in the political movement, like people like, what's that one? Lauren Southern, Meth-head. I think her name is. And what's that? Who?
Meth-head.
Yeah, well, him too, but I'm talking about actual celebrities or people that Moldy are nuts. Bigger Molyneux. Than him, you know?
Yeah, Molyneux's a good example.
Yeah, but they all started referring to, I don't think Molyneux ever used the term alt-right to describe himself, but other people did. And it was basically the whole meme started, we're all alt-right now. And this whole idea that it's just an umbrella term. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just this collection. It's like, well, no, it has a very specific meaning, but people just kept getting this in their head that it was just this like nebulous term. And now they can apply it to themselves when it's convenient and disavow themselves from the other part of it when it's not. And that's my take on it as it stands right now.
It's been around longer than the term, too. I would say that it has roots in lashing the society and the law and people in general lashing back at the KKK and organizations like that. And basically people trying to figure out how to rebrand themselves and kind of slip under the radar, you know, like getting rid of the hood and putting on a suit and tie, or just putting on a T-shirt and being a dude. There's a lot
of that. The Van Jones says they dropped the radical pose for the radical position or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically they cleaned up their act to become more respectable scumbags.
I mean, it's an example I can think of it that's kind of early is in the movie American History X, which is fiction, but it's pretty close to the way a lot of people were. The guy in there played by a Fight Club
Edward Norton.
Yeah, but there's a scene in there where like somebody calls him like, you know, I'm not going to have some stupid KKK member hanging out with my kids or something like that. And he's like, I am not some inbred Southern redneck KKK member. I don't even know I don't even believe the same things those guys believe. But, you know, this was a guy who had a large swastika tattooed on his chest, and he admired Hitler, but he didn't admire the KKK. And there's a lot of, I've heard, I mean, going back to like, I mean, David Bowie once in a cocaine meth binge said in a Rolling Stone interview, you know, I admire Hitler a lot. He had some great ideas. I don't know about all the killing, but I think fascism is a perfect form of government. And I hope that will end up tomorrow in Fiends Out of Context. I think fascism is a perfect form of government, Michael Dean. No, but I don't.
Well,
Travis.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned addiction, heroin addicts are usually treated as the lowest form of addict in the NA circles.
I don't think that's true. I've spent years
in Detroit, in
the circles that you're talking about.
In Detroit, it is.
I don't know. What do you say before I go into a long spiel that goes off my topic? What are you trying to say with that? I don't know where you're going.
Oh, just because you mentioned Bowie saying, well, fascism isn't so bad, you know, aside from the murdering and stuff.
Oh, he was doing coke. He wasn't even on speed or heroin. He was on lots of coke, and he talked about it in interviews back then, too. No.
Anyway, I mean,
the general idea in NA, I mean, the the written idea in NA that is like the actual drug of choice doesn't even matter. And a lot of meetings that have a lot of recovery, you're encouraged not to talk about the particular drug of choice and just identify as an addict. I think that makes a lot of sense because I think that people have a lot of like, oh, my drug was better than your drug. So it makes sense not
to. Oh, definitely.
It's like that scene from, was it Half-Baked? When they're in the NA meeting and they all...
Oh, yeah, we lost you. Yeah. You there? Hello? Lou, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Let's keep yakking.
Yeah, so let's keep yakking because that was like so off point. I don't even know what tree of the branch of life we were off on there. It had nothing to do with this, but...
It's Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Except that, you know, Christopher Cantwell started out kind of libertarian and then went full-on fashy and then went meth head somewhere in there. And I think he went meth head before he went full-on fashy.
Fiend
and,
phone.
You know,
fiend
Hitler phone. Liked speed. Yeah. I think that speed kind of tends to bring out the fashy, the fascist in you. So that sort of connection. I'm now, raising everyone's
one,
buffer.
One of the things about this, and there's something I want to say when we come back to the next segment about it. It's about one of Ben's podcasts.
Hang on, is Pibble back?
Yeah, I'm back.
I was, have you heard that phrase, Pibble for pit bulls?
Yes.
I love it. It's cute. All right, Lou?
I don't have time to go into what I wanted to say about Ben's, but when not too long ago, Ben Swan did a report about the alt-right, and this was shortly after his site went dark. But he basically, and he used the report from the Soviet Policy Lie Center as his main source, and was basically just reading their press release. I was very disappointed in that. Yeah. And basically, it was everybody that was to the right of Nancy Pelosi or Karl Marx.
Yeah.
So that was a whole umbrella on it. But the thing about the alt-right, they were always the white nationalists that they are. Maybe some of them didn't really know it, but maybe some of them were just really covering themselves up, like they were camouflaging themselves, and they were laying low in the liberty movement. And Ben did a podcast on this couple of years back. Is called Mimics in the Garden of Liberty, and pulled it up today, and I'm going to give it a listen. But essentially what it is this invasive species is infiltrating the Garden of Liberty, and it's setting down roots, and it's corroding the soil. It's ruining the soil and sucking the nutrients and the lifeblood out of the soil. And these people are calling themselves libertarians or anarchists, and they're neither. They're fascists. Yeah. They're all right. Jerkwads.
We'll be back.
So they didn't sell.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
When this final album is released, it's not good you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well crafted blueprint to create an ever increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on Jeep,
and Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, you gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, you gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, you gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, you gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, you gotta collect them all.
Definition of them is people that basically sound like, you know, your father's Nazis, except that they've got a Mises book gathering dust in the basement somewhere, which means, but that's not really true because
Archie Bunker.
Alt-right doesn't necessarily, like hipster Archie Bunker, because being alt-right doesn't necessarily mean you used to be a libertarian. It's just that that's the ones I see, right? I mean,
yes.
Is that correct? Lou, stop crunching on the air, man. It's really bad audio. I mean, it's kind of a joke when you get funny for a minute, but you've been doing it for like 20 minutes on the air. Please stop. Stop. Like,
all right. Well, they call themselves libertarians, but like I said, they're not. They're camouflaged.
But they don't never all, were libertarians. They don't all, right? Jeremy, right?
Many of them
well,
do.
No, because the like I said, the people that were actually alt-right did not consider themselves libertarians. As from what I've heard from a lot of them, they actually despise libertarians.
Yeah, I think Lou is confused in the way I was until I really looked around on this and did some research of, like, you know, Christopher Cantwell is not the typical alt-righter. You know, we know a lot of people, Christopher Chase Racels, a bunch of other people who were libertarian, Stefan Molyneux, and then like went more and more fascist as time went on. But that's not what the bigger movement is. The bigger movement, like you said, a lot of them don't like libertarians and never did, right?
No, yeah, and that was one of the funny things that came out of a couple of these so-called libertarians, or ANCAPs as they insist on referring to themselves, over the past couple of days. You know, one of them who came out with this post on Facebook the other day about how, you know, there needs to be this alliance between all these groups on the right, including the alt-right.
Who was that? Name names here. Go ahead and name names.
Oh, Christopher Chase.
You know, I blocked that guy a year ago before he was fascist at all. And now people are blocking him and like, this guy's crazy. And I'm like, they're sending me links. And I'm like, I can't see that. I blocked that guy a year ago just because he was stupid. Before he was fancy.
Yeah, I had him on my show. I've been friendly with him for a couple of years now. I never, like, he's very, you know, very hardcore into economics and very, but he was normally at least reasonable to talk with. And he was actually one of the last holdouts, it seemed, from a group of people that I was friends with that all started shifting this direction. And he kept holding out. But anyway, he makes this post about this alliance. 2 days later, he has a post basically saying, listen, you alt-righters, can you just cool it with the whole white nationalist thing? It's like, I kept trying to tell you, Chase, you don't understand what that word means, because that's what they are. They're white nationalists. You're asking them to stop being who they are in order to make them fit your little world that you want them to live in. That's
His plan for that alliance was as silly as Rothbard's plan to get involved with SDS, Students for Democratic Society, to oppose the Vietnam War together. Now, granted, opposing the Vietnam War was a good thing, but he was under the foolish impression that Students for Democratic Society, in other words, the commies, were going to stand up with libertarians for economic freedom down the road. That's why there's a special libertarian logical fallacy called appeal to Rothbard, because although he was very good on economics and he was very good on an awful lot of things, there were some things, particularly when it came to choosing alliances, that he absolutely was as dumb as six bags of hammers.
Yeah, and that's the argument. But that's the argument they always make. Like, yeah, he did try and fail with the left, but then he moved on to the right, and that's where a lot of these people get stuck. It's like, well, no, because he died. It's not like he didn't have enough time. He died before he was ready to admit that trying to work with the right was just as foolish as trying to work with the left. He never made any progress there. A couple generations later, he had progress when people in, like, you know, my generation started picking up his books and reading them. And picking up his essays and reading them. So it was a couple generations later he had an impact, but it had nothing to do with his alliance with the right. That was a failure too.
The whole bigger thing that I'm getting at, and we're not going to get to at least the next segment, is the reason I think this is becoming a thing in libertarianism. And it's really, it's like poison, man. It's really, really disgusting. And it's completely antithetical to liberty, to libertarianism, to anarcho-capitalism, to voluntarism. I mean, the argument I've heard is, well, yeah, I agree with all that stuff, but this is a street fight and there's no rules. So, I mean, I could kind of see that concept, but I don't think it's the right tack to take, the correct tack to take, shall we say.
It's a false premise.
So to speak. Just speaking their language.
That phrase.
listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby. Hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark. Bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Freedom Fiends. I hear monkeys meowing in the background. Are you back? Meow.
Yeah, I was turning down my heater because I care about good audio. Turn it on during the break. That's what we do here under Freedom Fiends. So I want to get to my point other than, well, we'll talk about Stephen Kinsella after this. My point is basically this, and we've given a really good background on the alt-white, and I think we've made a statement that we are not alt-white. Them and made it clear. The what? Did I say alt-white? Did I? That was an accident.
The alt-white. You kind of figured it was, but that's perfect.
Lou says aught. What's that German for?
I know. What does it mean? It's the autism thing, and I'm just not a fan of that.
Because you're autistic, so.
Well, no, that would actually mean I wouldn't care in the way most of my stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't like it.
Auswite. What is AUS in German? That's what I was thinking of. Lou?
Aus.
Aus.
That means from or out of. By
the Auswite, they're from white. Okay, so right. All right. Well, another thing too is, have you guys heard the term alt left?
I have heard it thrown around. Yes.
Not as much.
I think it's a term that works really well to explain, you know, everything from people having cry-ins at Cornell University because Trump won, all the way to, you know, people burning things in Berkeley to prevent free speech. You know what's funny too is both of those examples, it sounds like I'm defending the alt-right. It sounds because I'm defending, you know, it's I'm saying like you don't need to cry because Trump got elected. I think it's pretty disgusting that Trump got elected. I think it'd be even slightly possibly more disgusting if Hillary had gotten elected. You know, that's another thing too. Like, people think that I'm alt-right because I say, yeah, it's probably slightly not as worse, horrible, better, slightly not bad, double entendre, like double negative, triple times. You know, basically, I think I'm probably a little glad that Trump won instead of Hillary, in the same way that I'd probably rather be kicked in the groin really hard than like hit in the head with a baseball bat, you know?
I was actually hoping for Hillary to win, but that's when I was having a really bad flare up of my nihilism.
Yeah. Smash it all. We'll rebuild from the ashes.
I took antibiotics and I'm cool now.
Yeah. Not everyone's as good as camping at you are either, Lou. You know, I don't wanna live in a swamp with no electricity and internet for a year until you rebuild it.
That's my retirement plan. That's my life dream. Don't criticize my life dream.
I know. But
with my pet bears.
My pet bears. Grizzly
in
man.
A swamp?
Brown bear man. You gonna make video? I'll edit it. Hey, bears, so why don't you, if you're gonna make brown bear man and film all this, you know, like just put the SD card somewhere I can find them and make them into my documentary. Brown bear man. Here we see Lou walking into the woods of northern Michigan. He believes that the bears will be his friend for I can't do it. So here's what I think. I think that one, I think that a lot of people who in the Liberty movement who say they're alt-right really aren't in their heart of hearts and say it originally kind of trolling, because it really irks social justice warriors and they're really sick of social justice warriors. And I also think they do it to kind of get a rise out of other libertarians because, okay, the three people on this show, for people that don't know, we say and more or less actually believe that we think it should be legal to have vending machines with assault rifles and crack cocaine in a privately owned, untaxed, unregulated vending machine across the privately owned street across from the privately owned middle school. I like to say that because it really, you know, when people talk about like legalizing, you know, like decriminalizing marijuana and taxing and regulating it, I'll say, you know, why not have crack in vending around. Machines? What's that?
You were right the first time. It's legalizing that they can tax it, decriminalizing that.
Oh, okay, right. So, you know,
when they say about, legalize, tax, or regulate, I'm like, yes, no.
Yeah. and then you get these, like, people like, I don't know, I think Jeremy's done this, but the nuance of the difference between legalize and just have no law about. But, you know, I'd take legalize over people being thrown in cages. But anyway, so we believe that that's cool, and that's something that we were saying 5 years ago that not many people were saying 7 years ago. You know, like in the movie Guns and Reed, The Road to Freedom, that's kind of the whole premise of that movie that I made 7 years ago. When that movie came out, I'm not saying I was a pioneer because I was standing on the shoulders of giants like, you know, Boston Tea Party and a whole bunch of other weird, cool people that people have even don't even know who they are anymore. But it wasn't that common to say that. And now everyone's saying that. Like Facebook barely existed or didn't exist. And everyone was on MySpace and no one was saying those things. We made that movie and us and like, you know, a couple hundred other people made media that said the same things. And so now there are millions of people saying that kind of thing all the time. And they basically believe it. But I think, and this is my bottom line of this whole discussion today, is I think that a lot of people in Liberty like the shock effect that it has to say that. It's called macho libertarian flash, which is a term. It was called macho flash, something like that, from the Libertarian Party. They said in the 70s, somebody wrote an essay about how it's a bad thing. And we're past the Libertarian Party. We're not in politics. I think Libertarian Party is kind of stupid. But, you know, that term was what they said for being shocking. You know, like, we don't want to be macho flash libertarians. We want to talk reasonably or we'll turn people off. And I'm like,
we want to sound like Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah, basically. So
and act like them.
So I think that in a world, in a community, a worldwide community, mostly on the internet, where everybody says things, and in their mother's basements, where everybody says things like, oh, yeah, there should be crack in vending machines. It's immoral that there's not. What do you do to get a rise out of those people? I think that's the people that become alt-right kind of as a troll, you know, to like basically to try to stand out. And they're actually being very, very conformist in doing it. But they're trying to stand out from the libertarian, the, you know, straight up anarchist crowd by being shocking. And the way they do that is by, you know, being brutalist, to use a term, which Neiman and I actually used that term before. That's on one of the first Freedom Fiends. We didn't say brutalism, but we talked about, you know, things being, we talked about the brutalist architecture and an analogy for certain types of libertarians. But neither here nor there. What I'm saying basically, kids, is don't get sucked into thinking that it's cool. God, I sound like a public service announcement, but I basically am. So don't think it's cool. If you're a newly minted libertarian, don't think it's cool and that you'll stand out and be accepted and irk softer libertarians by adopting an alt-right stance if you really don't mean it in your heart of hearts. Because it's contagious. And I think people start saying that as a joke and end up Sig Heiling in their mother's basement for real. I really do.
So in short, what you're saying is the rowdier bunch has crossed the line and they've broken through another layer and gone a little bit deeper into the questionable territory. And then somebody else says, "Oh, I could top that. Here, hold my beer."
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of, I've seen that happen other places too. Like when I first got into punk rock when I was 20 in 1974, you know, it shocked me, and it was the Sex Pistols. But then, like, hardcore punk rock came along, Dead Kennedys, Black Flag, things like that. And that made the Sex Pistols look like doo-wop, seriously, musically and, like, what they sang about. And I was really into hardcore punk rock. I still am. And I used to think, like, this is so shocking to parents. Like, this is shocking to people who love the Rolling Stones, who are older now, who, like, whose parents thought the Rolling Stones were crazy, who thought their Elvis was crazy. You know, it gets harder
Elvis
every time.
Elvis gyrating pelvis.
Right. And I remember listening to Dead Kennedys and thinking, just the name of that band. I mean, I remember thinking, like, what could possibly come along that would shock people? You know, like, what could our kids listen to that would shock us? And then NWA happened, and it was like, basically, you know, hardcore gangster rap was songs literally about murdering people and how fun it is. And like,
I
predicted that. You know, I was listening to punk rock, saying, like, well, what could shock punk rockers if their kids listened to it? It would have to be like music that had no melody. I said like atonal music about killing people. And I said that jokingly to somebody, and it was years before that came out. And it's really weird. And it's like, I've kind of thought all along, like, what could shock people more than that? And I think it's alt-right. You know, I think it's the thing that's
for now.
Crackpipe and listen to this.
What's that from? That's funny, Lou.
It comes from the hold my beer. Basically, you have somebody that's about to do they're in a position to do something really silly, and they take the opportunity to do it. And of course, they're probably not at the best decision-making point in their lifetime.
Oh, what people say before they end up, like, you know, it's all fun till you get an eye poked out. And it's what you say right before you get an eye poked out. Like, you know.
Hold my intoxicating substance and watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That one. That's
Nick, who's probably never, well, he's had an intoxicating substance, but we won't say that on the radio because we don't want his parents to get mad at us. He's 18. Okay. Yeah. So,
which means it's curfew midnight now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're the Freedom Fiends Kratom Cargo Cult. We're the Kratom Cargo Cult.
We are the macho libertarian flashers exposing you to our liberty.
I know.
Or exposing our liberty to you.
We made that meme like 4 years ago before this was a thing. Yeah, so kids, don't try alt-right. I think that's the show title, something like that. Like, kids, don't try alt-right. Is that good? It's not as snappy as it could be. You got a better one?
I'm sure we'll have something before the end of the show.
Yep. Yep. So how come? So like James Week sent me a post of Stephen Kinsella, who's I consider a friend, and I consider, like, you know, one of the good voices of liberty, like, you know, kind of a little mini celebrity, you know, a celebrity of liberty who a lot of people like and I like, and we've had him on the show, and I didn't know this other side of him. Like, there's this this post of someone saying, about Richard Spencer, the guy who invented the term alt-white, the guy who got punched recently by some leftist goon, but, you know, didn't deserve to be punched, but should not be taken seriously. He's an total white nationalist guy. It says, where does Richard Spencer fit in this coalition? And Stephen Kinsella said, I think aside from his white nationalism, he's pretty damn libertarian in Austrian economics. What is up with that? We're going to talk when we get back. I didn't know that he's been like that for a long time, sort of.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Oh.
made this year. So we're calling the show, the episode, Friends Don't Let Friends Alt-Right. We wanted to call it Hold My Crack Pipe while I Alt-Right, which I think is hilarious in irony, but people might not get the irony. So we're using this picture that says the Alt-Right Starter Pack. I think Jim Jesus made this. I'm sending it to you guys. It's got, like, you know, a Make America Great Again hat, a Hente pillow, love pillow, the bell curve, that pseudoscience book about, like, trying to prove white nationalism with science, which doesn't work. Picture of Dylan Roof with a gun in his hand, a Confederate flag, a Daily Shoal oven mitt. Man, that's all right. Oh, and a 23andMe testing kit, which is kind of funny because I had one of those that I tested for health reasons. I sent you guys the picture that I tested for to find out things when I was having bad health.
Fiend
we did find
phone.
Out something that was
Fiend
useful
phone.
For my health. Hey, Jeremy.
Hello.
And then I found out that I was 164th African black. I guess black. African. We'll say African. That's the more accurate thing.
As I look at this, I'm missing the non-white side girlfriend on here. I don't see.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like Cantwell had. Yeah. So go ahead, Lou.
There's an old phrase that even Hitler had his favorite Jew.
Who was that?
I did a Third Reich tour through Munich back in the late 90s, and the tour guide was very knowledgeable on the subject, and as we were going through Munich and stopping at all these different places, he's giving the lectures, and he talked about
Fiend phone. Fiend phone.
Or a significant number of the Nazi leadership had used their influence to help their favorite Jews escape. And as a matter of fact, I believe Hitler helped out a couple on his own.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that his girlfriend was Jewish. What was her name? Braun.
Eva Braun?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the brains. He was the brain, she was the brawn of that relationship.
All right, so why is Stephen Kinsella, like, kind of sticking up for Richard Spencer? You said this is not new, and I'm shocked by it. I've never heard it. I don't pay that much attention to everything he says, though.
I don't follow him very closely. As a matter of fact, I quit following him on Facebook probably a couple years ago. This was around about the time that you and Nima had interviewed him. I don't even know if you guys were on GCN yet. I wasn't even on the show yet. I think I was just like a blogger or maybe a Facebook admin maybe I was just one of those people saying you should do this, you should do that. Get away!
And I got
get
sick
away,
of
boy.
It. I
you're,
just put
you're
you on
bothering
your
me.
Own day.
Yeah. So you're like, shut up and do some work. But anyway,
join it and change it from within. I think is what I said to you.
Could be. But anyway, yeah. he had a lot of anti-Islamic comments that would be kind of like the neocons or the Tea Party Christian Taliban types. So I believe he is a bit Christian conservative in his religious views.
Stephen Kinsella?
Possibly, maybe. I don't know.
I've never heard that. He keeps it to himself. He is.
Yeah, but definitely a lot of anti-Islamic stuff, and he comes off as very uptight conservative and acts like he's above other people. So I just really didn't care too much for his ego. And as far as his work goes, I don't know it very well. I'm not well versed on him. I don't know of him coming up with anything that was just absolutely crazy or anything like that.
I don't know. It's you know, I don't buy and the comment that someone put as a response to him is pretty funny. It's, you know, it's Lincoln being shot, and it says, well, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? Which, you know, other than Lincoln and connection to race and Civil War and all that and the hate in the Confederacy, you know, like other than any kind of alt-right connection that Lincoln might have, I think it's a good response because it's basically I don't like this, you know. Well, Stephen Molyneux has said some good things. No, I reject everything he ever did. I don't reject everything anyone ever said because they do a couple minor things bad, but when they have like an overreaching, you know, Nazism or white powerism or whatever, I can't recommend anything of theirs except for like, you know, how you'd study the writings of, you know, Reverend Moon or something.
Yeah, for Molyneux, I will still say that the Story of Your Enslavement is good work, but currently his credibility is...
I won't recommend it because it'll bring people down his wormhole to like Trump loving and licking.
Yeah, I might do a disclaimer. Don't listen to anything else he says. He's
just this and only
this. He's bat humor crazy.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
This is Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Lib Pair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Lou. And I'm a recovering statist. The last time I voted was in 2010. And I went into recovery. But I had a little relapse because in 2012 I voted in the primaries for Ron Paul because, well, statism, it's a hell of a drug. And... And I got drawn back in, and we talked earlier in the first hour about the alt-right guys, and they're kind of like the drug addict that never went into recovery. They just have a little bit of clean time. They started calling themselves libertarians or going into other stuff, but deep down they were always white nationalists. They probably came from a white nationalist type of mentality, and maybe for one reason or another they got interested in the liberty movement, but deep down they stayed white nationalists and basically just authoritarian scumbags and fascists. So I'm happy to say that I am now in recovery. I no longer want to snort government, and I don't want to appoint government people, and I don't vote, and I don't try to find the ultimate high from government. So yeah. Here we go. How long have you been clean, Jeremy?
I have not been clean as long as you. The last time I voted I voted in 2012, not just in the primaries. I actually voted, and I finally gave up the towards the beginning of the following year. After and then I technically got dragged back in by being asked to run for local office for the local Libertarian Party, but it was basically just like a ballot filler type thing, and I really didn't care about it. So
you're like the average LP candidate then?
Pretty much.
Okay. The only way I would consider a political candidacy would be if I were going to do a troll campaign that was so absolutely trolly that it made, I don't know, Vermin Supreme look like a mainstream viable candidate. That's the only way I would consider it. So I guess another comparison would be for the 2012 thing. I took a little puff, but I didn't inhale, but you drank the bong water because you ran for office.
Yeah, well, like I said, I wasn't planning on winning. I didn't really campaign. We didn't even get on the ballot.
Nobody in the LP plans on winning.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even get on the ballot. We got kicked off the. We got kept off the ballot altogether because they challenged our signatures. Well, yeah. Apparently, I don't know. The Republicans and the Democrats colluded against us to keep us off the ballot because they didn't want this one guy that we had running on our ticket, who actually was. I don't even think he was a libertarian. He was actually like a Republican, but just like a real. You know, he was a real nice guy who had an issue with something that was going on in his town and. Everybody got behind him and said, hey, if you run for, you know, whatever position it was, then we'll back you. So he got it in his head that he could help. And the Republicans turned him away and then the Democrats turned him away. And then he's like, well, where else do I go? So he went to the Libertarian Party and the local Libertarian Party. And when I say Libertarian Party, now, Nassau County isn't a big place, like, as far as land goes. But they cram like, I think I'm over a million people in this county here. And so there's a lot of people, but the Libertarian Party, when I joined it, I believe had 6 to maybe 8 active members, 2 of whom were friends of mine. Well, actually, one of whom was a friend of mine. The other one became a friend of mine from I met him through there. But the hardcore, the two people that were always either president or one of the all exalted positions over there in the party, the president of the local chapter was these two older guys. I think they were both like in their 50s or 60s, and they've been in the party forever. And they were, you know, really good guys. One of them was a lawyer, and you know, actually did some decent, had some like cases that he actually filed for to have the voting things change so libertarians would have an easier, like, he actually accomplished things, I guess, technically, if you want to look at it that way, through going through the process. But they were basically anarchists. They just wanted to try to keep the party alive and were trying to keep the whole, you know, it's an education thing. We're just trying to do it for outreach. But it was just this
kind of like thing. Kind of like Dare keeps kids from trying pot.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But it was just this pathetic little thing. But that was the party. So like, it wasn't very serious at all. And I literally was just like, yeah, if you really need me to do it, because nobody else will, find you can put my name down, I don't care. Okay. So it wasn't like, and then once it was seeing the Republicans and Democrats collude on like the local, like the very local level, to keep us off the ballot altogether. I was like, yeah, there's no hope in this whatsoever. I'm like, I'm an anarchist. I don't even want to be associated with the libertarians anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, I was.
So,
actually,
yeah, it's 4 years now. About.
I actually got involved in politics, and from what I saw, both locally and on the national level, it's like, no, I don't. It can't be fixed because it's not broken. It's working exactly as it should, or it's working exactly as it was designed to. And quite frankly, if it could be fixed, does it deserve it? And the answer was no. So I was like, okay, just let it burn, crash, burn, and die.
Yeah, well, that's the mode I've been in since, like I said, pretty much 2013. So yeah, it's been about 4 years now.
Yep.
So I've got 4 years in recovery.
Nice.
Feels good.
So how many people are you Liberty sponsor for, Ryan? Can they call you up in the middle of the night and say, Jeremy, help me out, man. I'm about to vote. You know, if they're tapping their vein.
I do have quite a few under my belt, I guess, people that I could consider, you know. I don't think they've officially asked me to be their sponsor, but I guess I could be because I'm, you know, I'm, you know, the whole red pill analogy. Well, I guess I was theirs, so mm-hmm. I've had enough, you know.
Well, the reason I bring up is because when you look at addiction, there's certain events like people that are they're using drugs to hide the pain or to get rid of the pain of some sort of horribly traumatic event in the past. There's triggering events that come along with that. One of the more common ones is death of a family member. That would have a tendency to get people to relapse. And when you're looking at election season, that happens to be an event that really triggers government users, you know, that are trying to be in recovery, because they're like, oh my God, there's this candidate out there, and oh my God, this is like the new thing. There's never been one of those. I mean, he's making these promises, and he's going to shrink government and restore freedom. And oh my God, I've never heard that before. At least not in the past 2 or 4 years. So who knows? Maybe this could be the one. And then they gotta like do a line of government, and next thing you know, they're tapping that vein.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole reason that I kept saying all along that I thought, you know, you and Michael mentioned it earlier about whether Hillary would have been worse, or you know, if it would have been it's slightly better now because of Trump. That's why I was saying the whole time I actually thought it would be worse with Trump, because it would get a lot of those people who are in that addictive phase, as you put it, who are trying to shake it, even people who have claimed to be libertarians or anarchists and they're done with the system altogether. They get sucked right back in, and usually because of some type of fear.
Yeah, I kind of got sucked in with the Ron Paul movement. I wasn't really believing that he had that strong of a chance. I believed it. And it was actually a podcast of Ben Stone's that Michael had recommended to me. This is my first time ever hearing Ben. And he starts off with his premise of Ron Paul's not going to win. I'm like, oh, go on. And by the end of the show, I'm like, oh, Ron Paul's not going to win. Oh, what do I do with all these darn flyers and yard signs and crap? But mostly my attraction to the Ron Paul movement was it was a great way to meet other liberty-minded people. I didn't know a whole lot of people in the area at the time. And great place to meet chicks, surprisingly. And it was probably one of the few libertarian venues where there was actually a few women running around.
Yeah.
But I had my little relapse. You know, Ron Paul was my drug of choice at the time. And I slipped a little bit. But through my liberty sponsor, Ben, I was able to get back on the wagon and realize that stuff's whack. Don't do politics.
Yeah, well, you're lucky in that case. See, I had somebody who led me here, but I never really needed, because luckily I didn't relapse once I finally reached that point. Like, I argued with him until I finally acquiesced and said, yeah, I give up. There's no hope. I can't do this. You were right. I'm an anarchist. I give up. But I didn't have to call after that. I was good.
Well, fortunately, drug addicts don't get on a drug to keep their friends from doing another drug. And that's what happened in this last election. A lot of people started supporting Trump to keep their friends from snorting Hillary Clinton, because she's a liar, a socialist, and her pantsuit stinks.
Yes.
And, yeah, oh, God, I forgot to do a disclosure. Trump is a liar, a socialist, and his toupee stinks. So I guess he mumbled some words up on a stage last night or recently or something like that. I don't know when it was.
Yeah, he had his first talk in front of Congress, I guess.
Yeah, I found out about halfway through that I had boycotted that event for certain reasons, just like I had found out that I boycotted the Oscars about halfway through and the Sports Bowl and a bunch of other stuff that I can't remember. But anyway, from what I understand, he says something really good. He was bemoaning the I think $6 trillion that had been spent in the Middle East on the wars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about how it was a waste of money and everything else. But he doesn't want to cut any of that money. He wants to add another $54 or $56 billion to the war budget.
Yeah, really? All this money has been wasted, but we need to spend more because we need to beef it up. Which is also something that one of the things that I was trying to point out the whole time with Trump, all these people who are jumping on the bandwagon. It's like, yeah, all these other things he says he wants to do and cut taxes here and do this. Yep, yep, yeah. And then pay attention to what the other hand's doing, because he's going to want to increase the military. He's going to increase the police state. Mm-hmm. And once you do those things, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Thank you, libertarians, for Trump, you Feinsteining idiots. How did that Schumer work out for you? We'll be back.
Good so far.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today. Because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Some exciting news. You're familiar with this little invention called Bitcoin, correct? Have you heard of it?
I may have heard of it, Lou, yes.
Interestingly enough, I think it got released onto the market in, I want to say 2009 maybe, was when it got out there. And it was like, you could buy like, I don't know, a bunch of Bitcoin for like a buck, something like that.
Yeah,
I just pennies a piece. I think the first Bitcoin transaction that occurred was, I believe it was a pizza for 30,000 Bitcoin. Could you imagine if you had 30,000 Bitcoin today?
Oh, geez, yeah, right. I think I was just gonna say, I think it was two pizzas, but yeah, something along those lines. It was something crazy,
yeah,
some big number.
The reason I bring that up is Bitcoin, and I believe it hit some all-time highs today, but according to Bitstamp, it closed at $1,223.53.
Woohoo!
Now, to give you an idea of the magnitude of this, gold is only about $25 more per ounce. So an ounce of Bitcoin is almost worth an ounce of gold.
Well, that is very exciting, because I mean, I think it did top the all-time highs. But
well, the important thing to remember is there's been a lot of naysayers out there, and they've always forecasted the demise of Bitcoin, and they've always said, well, Bitcoin's dead, you know, look at what happened today, and it keeps bouncing back. I mean, Bitcoin has died more times than Kenny from South Park.
Fiend phone.
Oh gosh,
fiend phone.
I'm back,
and it keeps coming back.
Yes, you just can't keep me down.
So, well, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about Bitcoin. So apparently you're like Bitcoin tonight, because you keep coming back. But
yeah,
I guess the big question is, what does Bitcoin know about Hillary? And the answer is nothing. That's why it's still alive and still going strong. Yeah. Or maybe it knows everything about Hillary. I don't know. But anyway, so that's some interesting Bitcoin news, news that you can possibly use. I personally am hoping, let's see what I got here. I am hoping to take my 0.3192639 Bitcoin and retire to Mexico soon.
Yes. Well, you know, if it keeps climbing, Lou, you might get there.
Well, with Bitcoin's at $1 million a coin, then...
Exactly. Like I said, it might take a while, but you'll get there.
Yeah, that might mean that the dollar's not worth doodly squat, but anywho. So, anyway, you have a special public service announcement called Michael Was Wrong.
Oh, yes, I have I just like to be able to say, Michael was wrong. I was listening to last night's show, and they were talking about, he said something about the mailmen and dogs, and the fact that dogs don't actually go after mailmen per se. It's not a regular occurrence. And I was like, well, that's not really true. Like, that stereotype is true for a reason. And I have one anecdotal story where pepper. It was pepper spray. He said, you know, they carry pepper spray, but they don't use it. I'm like, well, actually, like, my sister got sprayed by the mailman because my little Jack Russell used to get out occasionally back when I lived in my grandmother's house years and years and years ago. And occasionally she would get out, and she was a feisty little thing, but she was all bark and no bite. Like, she was the cat, she was the dog. She used to corner the cats. Like, we had one cat who lived mostly outdoors, and then a bunch of neighborhood cats that hung out near our house, and she would chase them under the house. and then corner them and then not know what to do and then get her butt kicked. Because she would just stand there, and then the cat would scratch her, and then she would run away crying. But anyway, so she would get out, and the mailman, like, freaked. And one day, my sister was outside, and he was threatening to spray the dogs. And my sister ran out and said, no, it's okay, I'll get them. And the guy just didn't even bother to look and just sprayed downward and hit my sister in the face. So he maced my sister instead of the dogs. But on the whole, they do. I mean, there's a reason they carry that mace, because a lot of people, a lot of mailmen do get attacked. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and the best thing a lot of us could come up with was it seems to be not just the mailman, but anybody in delivery uniforms. And the common thread is usually most of those places, like you get a uniform through, you know, through the company, but they have like a wash service. And like, especially like around here, they use Cintas and stuff, and they all use the same company to have all their laundry done. So maybe there's something in the detergent. Maybe there's something in the smell, I think, of the uniform that actually sets the dogs off when it comes to mailman. So
Now, yeah. Is it really a mailman, or does she just identify as a mailman?
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
And we are back. Freedom Fiends. Yeah. Fiends. Woo-hoo. So I have this article here that Michael sent me earlier today, and oh my God. Weapons grade stupidity. So from the economic ignoramuses, the
fiend phone
that are known
fiend
as
phone. The,
oh man.
Oh.
I'll let Lou finish his sentence. Go ahead.
We have this wonderful article, and this highlights the tax hating pro business Republicans who are creating new taxes and are trying to screw the businesses. And this article is from CNBC. It says taxing imports at the border could cost America billions in retaliation.
Oh, now, yeah. I sent you that I'm going to interrupt and talk about something else instead. That's an important story. But I have complaints about the work on the audiobook. It's great, but it needs more work. Ben Stone's audiobook, and I'm not going to put it in the show notes until, and I'm offering to fix it if Shane doesn't want to fix it, but this is a teaching hospital. So here's the thing. The volume between the different people reading, and especially between the intro and outro, is vastly different. It needs normalizing. That's not how you do an audiobook, man. The recording's great. Like, everyone sounds good. The reading's good. The voices are good. The production's good of each individual section. But sewing them together, like, nobody normalized them. Like, the way Shane is at the beginning, that's the volume everyone should be. Also, Shane has some plosives and pops on his P's and B's and D's. And also, there should be at the beginning of each segment, it should say what book it is. That's standard for audiobooks. It says at the end, but not at the beginning. So if you throw this into rotation on a radio station that's playing a bunch of podcasts, no one's going to know what they're listening to go find
my section. My sections have it.
Good. And it should also have a BIPCOT no government license warning or notice.
I could have swore that was part of the notes for everybody.
I didn't listen to all of it. I listened to like two or three the beginning of two or three sections, and then did some needle drops. And I'm not saying it needs to be done over. I'm saying, and I wrote Shane and said this, if it's too much to do, send me a data DVD of the WAV files and I'll fix it, because I care about Ben Stone like you guys care about Ben Stone. He's basically my best friend, and I want his audiobook to be great. And as it stands now, you know, it's not great, but it could be without a lot of work. So I'll do
make
that.
Make Ben's book great again.
Yes. Yeah, because it was good. Yes. You know what? At this, I mean, I'm not saying that this adaptation of that book is as different as, like, you know where I'm going, right, Jeremy? As Shulman, no. You know, as his movie is of his book. But,
yes,
you know, yeah, this book, this audiobook is not going to make people tell two friends about it. Like, and you couldn't get this on Audible or anywhere like that because it's got very fixable problems. I could fix this in an hour. So send me the files. You'll probably have to mail me a file. So Shane, send me the files. I'll fix them. Have a great show, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Worms.
Worms.
So anyway, back to the article. Taxing imports at the border could cost America billions in retaliation. On a little side note here, it's really nice to see that the Democrats are pointing out how all these added taxes are going to destroy the economy. Yeah, when it's their tax increases.
But those taxes are different, Lou.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to tax the people to see what's inside of them, apparently.
Exactly.
But wait.
So what they're saying here is though that are they alleging that it's actually going to be possibly us that would be paying for the wall and not really the Mexicans? Is that what's being alluded to here?
No, we're not even at that, but I can address that. I'm not sure if that's in the article buried somewhere, but I know that Trump has talked about the 20% tariff on Mexico to force them to pay for the wall. So what that would look like, and if the people listening at home could envision this, the people that are driving, just, you know, keep paying attention to the road, but if you're not driving right now and you'd like to envision this, think of the Mexico ball, America ball meme with Trump ball standing in between them. Mexico ball says, that will be $5 for the avocados. Trump ball jumps in and says, hold on there, 20% tariff there, Poncho. And then Mexico ball says, oh, my bad, that'll be $6 for the avocados. Five for me and one to Trump. And then Merca Ball, or Make America Great Again Ball, says, thanks for paying for the wall, cuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The new all right drinking game, every time somebody says cuck, they have to drink an ounce of bleach.
If only.
I
solve
like
a lot of problems.
I personally think if they want to show their nationalistic pride, if they want to show how dedicated they are, they should take the very thick plastic bag challenge, and that's where they put the bag over their head and hold it there for 10 minutes. So anyway. Back to the article here. President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans are taking advantage of the party's control of the federal government to reshape the way U.S. companies are taxed and plundered and pillaged. CNBC just says taxed. I added that on my own. But one plan could incur the wrath of the global trading community and cost the U.S. hundreds of billions every year. The tax reform bill created by House Speaker Paul Ryan. You remember when he was running as like the Tea Party guy, the small government, the Leviathan, who also voted for TARP, and he says this offends my principles, but I'm going to do it to preserve my principles.
Yes.
Kind of like when Bush says that we have to abandon the free market to save the free market.
Yes.
So anyway, House Speaker Paul Ryan and Representative Kevin Brady, which could create a so-called border adjustment tax. Border adjustment tax. That's rather creative. Could draw $385 billion in retaliatory tariffs from our trading partners. According to estimates from an economist at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, a nonpartisan think tank. Under the border adjustment scheme, and that's their word, it's quite a fitting word, I might add, Washington would not tax exports, but would impose an across-the-board tax, probably around 20% on imports into the country. Considering that most of the, particularly the wintertime produce here in America, comes from south of the border, you can expect to see some nice little jumps in food prices. You might want to buy some canned vegetables while you can.
Or, anyway, or learn how to can.
Yeah. What's that?
I said, or learn how to can.
Yeah. Maybe I'll talk about that next week. But anyway, probably around 20% on imports into the country. The hope is that the new import tax would mitigate the big boost to the U.S. budget deficit that's expected if Trump slashes U.S. corporate taxes. So I think what that shows is when people get excited about a certain tax cut, they're getting excited about it not being charged in one place, but because taxes always have the boomerang effect, it's going to get charged somewhere else. Border yep. adjustment also seen as boosting U.S. exports and manufacturing. Something else. When it comes to punitive taxes like that. Well, all taxes are punitive, but this is specifically punitive. It often has mm-hmm. the opposite effect. In order for them to get that 20% tax, that means that Americans have to keep buying those goods. That's how they get their revenue. If Americans quit buying those goods, then they're not getting that revenue. But exactly. Because Americans are forced to pay the higher domestic prices, they're not getting any savings. So they're paying the same price that they would pay, maybe a little less, maybe a little bit more than they would if they got the goods from foreign countries. So when you add a big giant tax like that, you kind of eliminate the possibility of collecting it. Not to mention, well, exactly. I hope there's some really good black and gray market action going on. But anyway,
well, I would hope so.
Yeah,
but that's besides this whole other thing they're talking about with the retaliatory tariffs.
Yeah, well, I'm about to get to that. But countries affected by the tax could retaliate with their own tariffs on imports of American-made products, and could do so with the sanction of the World Trade Organization, the Ooh. Governing body in that kind of trade dispute. We don't know for sure if the Republican tax plan would trigger WTO-approved retaliatory tariffs, but foreign governments are already laying the groundwork for legal cases, and has happened before, though never to the extent that a 20% tax on imports could incite. Now, interestingly enough, the common complaint of American, especially conservatives, but of American politicians is that China is a currency manipulator, while ignoring what the Federal Reserve does here, saying that there's unfair labor practices over in these other countries, or the cost of labor is lower, and they're taking unfair advantage of not having as invasive and parasitic of a government over in those countries as is here. And then rather than getting rid of the things that made the domestic producers uncompetitive, they want to impose those same problems onto the foreign producers and make them uncompetitive also. So it's kind of like a economic affirmative action program where the weak are not made stronger, but the strong are made weaker. Because that's how government operates. It's just crippling. But anyway, there's a nice little chart on here that talks about, I think Canada says, okay, the World Trade Organization approved retaliation in 13 trade disputes since 1995. Canada in 2015, $817.2 million, it looks like. So, but anyway, in trade, the devil is in the details. The WTO Director General Roberto Azevedo told Bloomberg recently, as the new trade policies get hammered out, whether they conform to international trade standards will be figured out. I think the WTO has the tools to handle a lot of the things that have been mentioned as concerns so far, Azevedo said. The WTO has the authority to arbitrate disputes between member countries when one feels targeted by another's trade policies. The organization has heard more than 500 such cases since its inception in 1995, and 13 have gone through the arbitration process and received approved retaliatory judgments. Of those, the U.S. was involved in 9 cases. And to make matters worse, 2 of the biggest trading partners for Americans are Canada and Mexico, and they're going to be targeted. They've already received permission to impose these retaliatory tariffs, and it says here, to the tune of $1 billion. So that's $1 billion that's going to get added onto the cost of everything.
Yep. And they were the last 2 to actually successfully do this through the WTO against the United States. So the precedent is there.
We'll be back.
listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Do you want to make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT No Gov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government license is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government license, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people. Be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at FiendFest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPStrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. Final segment. Maybe a little redemption in the third act. If not redemption, certainly some condescending sarcasm. When we left, when we left before the commercial break, we were discussing Donald Trump and the Republican House's plan for the 20% tariff, also known as the Affordable Imported Goods Act. So, anyway, yeah, they have this idea that they're going to impose these tariffs, and part of the reasons is they say that these other countries are engaging in unfair trade policies. So what they're doing right now is they are retaliating against trade partners with a tariff, and it appears that they are under the expectation that these trade partners will not retaliate back with another tariff. And the history of this is each country, or each government, keeps adding tariffs and adding difficulties and making things more expensive for their population and making it more difficult for their population to sell to the other population. So, it's like rival gangs going by and drive-by taxation. They're just spraying up the neighborhood with full auto taxes and tariffs.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous.
Do I have this right? Am I close?
I think so. Sounds about right. But yeah, I mean,
condescending enough?
I think maybe you could lay it on a little bit thicker. But you mentioned in the last segment, you mentioned the chart that was in here, and we started talking about Canada and Mexico. But I mean, on this list, you know, the 13 times whatever you think about the World Trade Organization and what they're doing, because it's still a centralized authority essentially, which I'm not a huge fan of. But whatever you think of them, you know, they've even ruled that 13 times in what now 22 years, and of those times, like I think two of them that we went in the favor of the United States. Seven of them went against the United States.
Okay.
But just since 2002, like $5 billion has had to be shelled out, from the U.S. because they were the other country that they lost to altogether. Total, they were awarded up to $5 billion. So, again, there's already this precedent for it, and there's definitely a precedent for Canada and Mexico because it happened just within the last back in 2015. Both of them won. Canada won almost $1 billion by themselves. So there's already a precedent here, and it's like you said, they're going to do is just keep titting for tatting and getting away with what they can, which has the backfire effect of always, they claim it's supposed to be punishing the other countries and make things better for them, but it just in turn, like almost every other action government takes, it actually affects the people worse and makes their situation worse. and they'll tit for tat, and then once the World Trade Organization comes in, once it gets high enough, then they'll say, okay, well, no, now we're going to award you this, and then it'll cost even more money, and then the next round it'll start all over again.
Yeah,
and it's a vicious cycle when people just, like, you know, it just stopping any trade in general is just insane, because if people want to trade things, you know, amongst themselves, why should they not be able to?
Yeah, the politicians have this idea that it's going to be a pinpointed precision surgical strike with nuclear weapons, and essentially the American and also the foreign economies are going to wind up the victims of friendly fire and die from collateral damage.
Yep.
So, and I really want to express this to a lot of people, because there's a lot of people that usually the conservative Republican types, they claim to be free market capitalists and everything else, but they're really, really socialistic in anti-business when it comes to taking a look at different things. A story, I think I've told this before, not recently, but I was in Walmart one time, and there was this young guy in there, this real, real thin, wiry guy. Kind of tall and lanky, but anyway, he's got these bags of goods, and he just got done at the checkout. He's got these bags, so he's about to tip over from all the stuff that he's got on there, and he says to one of his friends, he sees one of his friends that says, you know, man, Walmart got all my money. And I'm like, thinking to myself, they got your money, but you got all that crap. You're about to fall over. You got so much crap. They have this anti-business idea that trade goes one way. Now, yeah, you're spending money, but you're actually getting something in return. So quit being socialist. Accept that trade is a beautiful thing. It's mutually beneficial.
Yes.
So thanks for coming out tonight, Jeremy. And thanks to everybody for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. And I will put a link into Ben Stone's podcast, Mimics in the Garden of Liberty. Please listen to it. It's well worth the time.